who will be speaking about national suffering as a precursor to Kimu v'Kibbu. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah. Alan asked me to make story sheets. It seems like I'm alone, but hopefully you'll enjoy them. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much for inviting me to this symposium. Symposium is not a very yeshivish word, so I always adjust it a little bit to... it's not a yeshivish word. It is one of my favorite words. It's a first. The close second is probably it's a more academic first cousin colloquium. But they're both wonderful words, and I appreciate being offered to participate, especially after such chash of a speaker. It's very very big schos and honor. You know, the in spirit of the title... So I had a little bit of a chalisha sadas, and I was told I was the last speaker. The order that I implied in the title is you're supposed to suffer first, then hear Dibri Torah. And being the last speaker, I guess I really should have been the first one to torture you a little bit. Then you could hear from Rav Tzvika, from Rav Revach, the Marda Asra, hear a real Dibri Torah, but shtei tshuvas b'davar. Two reasons that it's not so bad. First of all, I think for Jewish people, any time that you go 5 minutes overtime, it's already suffering enough. So I'm getting up here to speak a few minutes after my slot, so it's not so bad. You went through the suffering already. Maybe we could learn it a little bit. Second of all, in the spirit of Inahapechu. Okay, so the title is about national suffering, but we'll flip it around. First we'll learn, then we'll suffer after. Not so bad, not so bad either. The Psukim tell us at the end of the Megillas Esther that after the whole upheaval and finally we won this war that was not going to be in our favor, the news outlets were not reporting that Jewish people were going to win, and all of a sudden we had this mahapecha, this unbelievable turn of events, and we won the war, we emerged victorious. So we are so thankful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided us with Ora and Simcha and Sason, light and happiness, joy. And the Gemara famously darshins in Maseches Megillah and Daf Tes Zayin, now, these words on their face, they really mean happiness, different types of rejoicing and celebrating, but there's a deeper level of meaning as well. There's an additional level of interpretation. Ora, the Gemara says, zo Torah. Ora, that we merited great light. We had this shining light illumining our lives. It was the or, the light of Torah. So I wouldn't have thought I have to ask this question. But the Mefarshim asked, what does Torah have to do with Purim? What does having a light of Torah shining on us have to do with the winning of the war against Amalek, against Haman, against our enemies on Purim? What shaykh is Torah to Purim? So again, I wouldn't have thought you have to ask the question, but if you look on the side, the comments of Rabbi Yosef Engel in his Gilyoni HaShas, so he writes very obviously that L'chayr the Pshat is very simple. You go to the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos. The Gemara in Maseches Shabbos on Daf Peches, I believe it's on the source sheet, source number one. The Gemara tells us that we had a Kabbalah Satorah way back in history. We had a Matan Torah at Har Sinai. We had a Kabbalah Satorah. We had a Maim at Har Sinai. But that Maim at Har Sinai was a little bit questionable. It was a little bit iffy in terms of the Kabbalah. Why? Because by Yisviatzvu Tachtes Ahar, we stood under the mountain. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Kafaleim Har Kigigis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu held the mountain over our heads, and it was a little bit coerced. It was a little bit by force. We weren't really all in necessarily, or at least we can't prove that we were completely all in. So it wasn't a full Kabbalah. It wasn't a full acceptance in that sense. Much has been said about this. That is not what we're here to discuss. The Gemara then says, Amar Rava, that even though it's true that we could have thought that we have a way out because we were honest, we were kind of forced into it, Hadr Kiblu Abimei Achashverosh, when it came to the times of Achashverosh, when it came to the story of Purim, when we had this Ma'apecha, when we won the war, we were Mekabel Torah again. How so? Dichsiv Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim. We were Mekayim and we were Mekabel. What does it mean, Mekayim and Mekabel? Kimu Masha Kiblu Kvar. There was a Kabbalah way back in history. It wasn't complete. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't rock solid. Now we're Mekayim that Kabbalah. Now we upheld that Kabbalah. Now we had a real Kabbalah Satorah. So right here, right on the page, Chazal certainly connect the Yontif of Purim with the Simcha of Kabbalah Satorah, Ora Zotorah. Clearly, Purim yields a Kabbalah Satorah and an even stronger Kabbalah Satorah than the original one of Chag HaShavuos. Very beautiful. But the question's really kind of beg itself at this point, meaning we've answered the connection between Torah and Purim, but we haven't answered the why. Why is that true? Why is it true that a Purim leads to a Kabbalah Satorah? I get why a Matan Torah leads to a Kabbalah Satorah, why a Shavuos leads to a Kabbalah Satorah, but what does Purim have to do with receiving Torah? What does Purim have to do with learning Torah? What does one have to do with the other? Why are they actually connected? So what I wanted to do for the next few moments, B'li Neder Mirtz Hashem, is present, I would outline it as three mahalchim, three approaches to how to understand this connection between Purim, the war of Purim, the victory of Purim, and the Kabbalah Satorah, and we'll do so in order of the sheet in front of you. I'm not sure we'll stick to it exactly, but three ideas that I think are very interesting and meaningful and deep in terms of the story itself. But if you pay enough attention, if you focus, if you stay with me for a little bit longer, you'll see how they're applicable today. You'll see how they're applicable for us right now, and how it's important to put this into practice in order to have a better Kabbalah Satorah for all of us on Purim and for the rest of the year. We'll take a little detour. You'll notice over the last few months, Rachmanu Litzlan Klal Yisrael have suffered some serious tragedies, some terrible downs in the history of Klal Yisrael. The death of soldiers, Rahman al-Tzlan, every day, the numbers keep growing. It's unbelievable to think about the number of soldiers that are killed. And that's after the horrible massacre that took place so many months ago already. The hostages that are still being tortured. People around the world, as Rabbi Reilach mentioned, who are suffering. Jews who are, again, there's a question if Klal Yisrael should exist. There's other symposiums going on, whether we should still exist. The terrible misfortune that Klal Yisrael is going through. And in that sense, we're on a down. We're on a low. We're in the depths right now. We're in despair. And on the other hand, literally October 8th, there was a call for thousands of pairs of tefillin in Eretz Yisrael. And you had soldiers that were putting on tzitzis for the first time, saying Shema Yisrael. I think you literally had, if I'm not mistaken, I read this, people being megayer because they wanted to die as a Jew in the army. This is what's going on at the same time. Simultaneously with everything that's going on, people are finding their Jewish identity, and even better, keeping Torah and mitzvos. People who already had a Jewish identity are shomer Torah and mitzvos. And somehow there's this contradictory effect. That on the one hand, we're so low, and on the other hand, we feel this incredible spike, not only in Achdus, not only in Chesed, which are so important as well, but in Torah and Mitzvos, in Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shemayim, somehow there's a spike. How do those two things go together? How do those two interact? What do they have to do with each other? Are they parallel? Are they opposites? Are they coincidental? How do those two things relate? So if you look in source number 2 and 3, you have two excerpts that I typed up for you from Rav Soloveitchik's drashas. They're both in the same volume. It's called Divrei HaGus V'HaRach. It's a beige volume. You may have seen it before. It's not the most popular of volumes, but it has a bunch of his drashos, including some of his hespedim. Rav Soloveitchik was a gevaldik maspid. He was an incredible maspid. People didn't do it like him. They don't do hespids like him anymore. So the first source in source number 2 from Rav Soloveitchik is a hesped he said on his uncle, Rav Belva Soloveitchik, the Brisker Rav. And in that context, he tells us that there are really two ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself to the Jewish people, to the Jewish individual, and to the Jewish nation. The way HaKadosh Baruch Hu we think of revelation, we think of Giloy, is exactly like that. Revelation, exposure. He picks up a mountain and says, I'm here, everyone come and get it. I'm here, there's a divine light shining and everyone can come be Mekabel the Torah, I'm here for you. And that is one way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself to the Jewish people. However, there is another way that we approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is another way that the Ribono Shel Olam makes a connection to us, and that's actually by hiding. That sometimes, or oftentimes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a kel mistater. He's a mysterious God. He's a Ribono Shel Olam that doesn't seem to interact with you in your daily life. Someone who doesn't feel connected to you. Someone, something, that feels a bit beyond you, a bit too far. And because it's so far, because the distance is so great, because the night is so dark, we're searching harder for a light. We're looking for that connection a little bit harder. We're searching deeply within ourselves to find that kel mistater within the mystery, within the opaque night that we're going through, the tragedy. That's where you find the Ribono Shel Olam. And he quotes for us here how Moshe Rabbeinu is exactly that case. When does Moshe Rabbeinu have his amazing revelation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his amazing discussion with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where according to the Gemara in Brachos, maybe he even learned one of the secrets of creation, the secrets of the world, of Tzadik V'Ra'lo? He learns that right after the Chet Ha'Ega, last week's Parsha, Parshas Kisisa. He asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he beseeches him, teach me your ways, show me who you are. He's half denied his request, but the other half is fulfilled. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu meets Moshe Rabbeinu there, at his peak, at Klal Yisrael's low, after the Chet Ha'Ego. It's at that moment that Moshe Rabbeinu searches a little bit harder. Because when it's a kel mistat there, we look even harder. The next source, number 3, Kol Dodi Dofek, the Rav's famous drasha, which he weaves so beautifully from Tzadik V'Ra'lo, actually, and Sefer Iyov, into a hashkafa about Eretz Yisrael and Medinas Yisrael, and very important contemporary in his time and contemporary for us as well. It's timely and timeless, that drasha. So in there he has a line where he tells us, it's Psukim in Sefer Dvarim. The Psukim tell us, Bitzar Lecha Umtza'ucha, Kol Advarma Eila, meaning when you have a tsar lecha, it's distressing for you. Umsa'ucha kol advarma eila, and all these terrible things befall you. Vishavta ad Hashem lakapa. The pasuk says at that moment, what will you do? Tshuva. You'll do tshuva. That's what the Rav develops in this essay called Dodi Dofik so beautifully. That Yisurim, when a person suffers, it's mechayiv. It obligates that person in introspection. Yisurim don't make us ask why. They ask us what. They make us ask what should we do? How can we change? How can we better ourselves? When we experience Yisurim, when we experience suffering nationally, personally, communally, when we experience hard times, we naturally have to reach out for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, find a way to do tshuva, find what we can improve on, and that's how we come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Yisurim. A tzara hi liyakum mimena yivashaya, the Rav says. That it's not that we have a tzara, and then luckily we have a salvation afterwards. Mimena yivashaya. From the tzara itself comes the Yeshua. We're going to experience the salvation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the tzara itself. It's a message. It's an impetus for tshuva. And that's the first level, I think, of understanding, the first approach to the connection between some natural national calamity, some national suffering, some tragedy that we go through, and yet it leads to a Kabbalah Satorah because it's necessarily so. Because the tragedy, the hard times are mechayev. They obligate us to look deeply within ourselves, to find the Ribono Shalom, to find ourselves, and find the way back, find the route to be closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through tshuva and through Kabbalah's Torah, through Kabbalah's old Torah mitzvos, like we're seeing in the modern times and like we saw already in the Antifa Purim as well. But the truth is, it goes even deeper than that. It goes even deeper than that. In source number four, if you look at page number one, you might think I went to YU, but if you turn the page, you'll see there's other things other than our salvation care, I promise. I hope I copied both sides. Yeah, there's another side here. Don't worry, guys. I'll wake you when we're done with the Rav if you want. So if you look at source number four, there's a beautiful book that they printed, transcriptions of the Rav's lectures on suffering, on avelus, on tragedy. It's called Out of the Whirlwind. This essay within that book is also called Out of the Whirlwind. So in there, the Rav says very poignantly, very simply, not simplistically, just very, very basically, he says it's even more than we said a second ago. Maybe you'll read with me in the bold for a second. From the very dawn of our history, meaning at the start of our Jewish people, when Avraham Avinu came into existence with the emergence of Avraham, suffering was considered both the main challenge and, here's the important line, the great means of realizing the meta-historical destiny of this community. The birth of the charismatic community of Klal Yisrael was accompanied by affliction and pain. The covenant is born through the dialectic of suffering, through the contradiction implied in a shattered existence, in the mystery of a torn and desolate being. You look in source number five, this is clearly what the Rav is referencing. He quotes it there, I just didn't copy it for you. That the Bris Ben Abbasarim, which is the promise to Avraham Avinu that we will be a great nation, that we will have a Klal Yisrael that leaves Mitzrayim, involves within it, fundamentally, necessarily, in the building of Klal Yisrael is Kigeri Yezaracha Be'eretz Lo Lahem. That you're going to have an Abdus, you're going to have an Inui, that you're going to be suffering, you're going to experience a tragedy in Mitzrayim. From there, you'll become the great nation of Klal Yisrael, but it starts with that calamity, it starts with that pain, it starts with that torture, always, from the dawn of history, Avraham Avinu, Moshe Rabbeinu, all the way to the Klal Yisrael Mitzrayim, that's necessarily the case, because that's how we come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look in source number six, the very beginning of the book Halachic Mind, also by Rav Soloveitchik. That's the hardest book by far of Rav Soloveitchik to read. First of all, half of it, I'm not saying this in any way to make fun, everything is Torah in one way, but half of it is not Torah. You have to be a master of physics and metaphysics and probably some sort of math also, and then Torah on top of that.
And English.
And English, yeah. I always say there's two, you know, you can read the Rav's books. He wrote so beautifully, such a beautiful writer, you'll see here. You know it's beautiful if you can't understand it, right? That's how you know. So he's such a beautiful writer, but he wrote so beautifully in English and in Hebrew. People don't appreciate that. They don't read the Hebrew. The only difference, if you read the English Sfarim or the Hebrew Sfarim, is how many dictionaries you need. When you read the English books, so you need an English dictionary to try to understand what the words are. If you read the Hebrew books, so you need a Hebrew-English dictionary to get the English. Then you need an English dictionary to understand what the English word means. You always need at least one dictionary. But here, if you're a master of English, like Rav Siegel pointed out, if you're a master of physics and you're a master of Torah, you can understand the halachic mind. Thankfully, the second paragraph in the book is not so hard, and that's the one we're copying over here. So I, with my small brain, was able to understand this. So in source number six, you'll see, and recently my Rebbe, Rav Twersky Shlita, grandson of Rav Soloveitchik, quoted this in this very context. From time immemorial, meaning throughout history, whenever the identity of the individual and community was shattered, man encountered God. Whenever we felt that downfall, whenever there was a tragedy, a calamity, we felt the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I will not embarrass myself and read the next word, but it means man who grew up in paradise, meaning Gan Eden, man after his fall, meaning after he sinned. That's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls out. Moshe, after the episode of the golden calf, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls out. Religious experience is born in crisis. It is always true that on the other side of a crisis lies HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not simply that it encourages us, it's an impetus, it's a motivating factor for us to do tshuva. It's more than that. That within that tzara, licked in the tzara, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribono Shel Olam is there in the Eis Tzara, and we always discover HaKadosh Baruch Hu in those hardest of times. Why? Why is that true? Why does it happen like that? Why is it that a tragedy helps us meet the Ribono Shel Olam right then and there? So you look at page number two. I gave you two basic ideas from earlier important thinkers. Source number eight is the Baal HaTanya, which my Rebbe actually made this sushtel. He juxtaposed this Baal HaTanya with what the Rav says at the time. But the Baal HaTanya basically explains a very important concept. It starts really in the previous parak and earlier in the Sefer as well, but here's where he draws it out in Parak Yud Tes. The Baal HaTanya explains that every Jewish person, no matter how from or not from, doesn't really matter, they have an ahava misuteres. They have a hidden love, a burning fire inside of them that yearns for the Ribbono Shel Olam, that pines for Kedusha, that wants to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how he describes so beautifully earlier in Tanya, that the neshama is like a nair. It's always reaching upwards. It's always going for higher levels. So in this context, he tells us that every Jew has this. Doesn't matter how fry, it doesn't matter how from, every single Jew has this. But we cover it up. We have this personality. We have externalities, we have interactions, we have distractions, we have so many things going on in our life that we cover it up and we bury the ahava deep within us. And yet, somehow, and you'll find this in storybooks, you'll find this in history books, somehow when the ultimate test comes, when we're told, bow down or I'll kill you, when we're told, go to the gas chamber, somehow everyone's saying Kriya Shema. Doesn't matter where they were 2 days ago, they're saying Kriya Shema. Doesn't matter where the soldier was 2 days ago, which bar he was in Tel Aviv, all of a sudden he's wearing tzitzis. How does that happen? How does it change? How does it flip on a dime like that? The answer the Baal HaTanya says is that it was always there all along. And the only difference is that during a tzara, during a nisayon, during a test, all of the externalities are stripped away. All of the klipos, all the shells that covered up that love, that fire for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they just dissipate, they dissolve, they disappear, they don't matter anymore. They're not there, and all that's left is the ahava. All that's left is the Esh Tamid Tukar Al Mizbeach. All that's left is that fire, that Ahava Mizuteres that was there all along, because everything else has disappeared. And you certainly see that in our current context, and you certainly see it throughout history. In source number 7, this is the Maharal. He has this in many places, but he has this in the Hakdama to Derech Chaim, which is his commentary on Maseches Avos. He comments on a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that there are three things that the Klal Yisrael were zocha to as presents, as matanos, and all of them, says the Gemara, were niknes b'yisurin. They're only going to be acquired through yisurin. They're only going to be acquired through suffering, through challenges. Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and I believe Olam Haba are the three examples the Gemara gives, and it quotes Psukim. Ashrei Agav Asher Tiasranu Ka, Umisar Rascha Tlamdenu, that there's a connection between Torah and yisurin is the one for Torah. So the Maharal says, why is that? Why do you need to suffer to get a Torah? Why do you need to suffer to get a Olam Haba? Why do you need to suffer to get Eretz Yisrael? So he explains all three of these things are otherworldly, each at their own level. Eretz Yisrael exists physically in our world, but it's next worldly. It's all Kedusha. The Peros grow faster. It's a land of Zrizis. It's the Eretz HaTzvi. It's something entirely different than everything else that exists geographically in our world, territorially in our world. It's a totally different matzav. It's a next worldly matzav. The Torah comes into our world and it reveals HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon to us, but it doesn't exist in our plane. It's from a different world. The Sfas Emes has a term. He calls the Torah a shavui. The Torah is a prisoner, meaning it really doesn't belong here. It belongs in the upper worlds. It belongs in Olam Haba, but Nebuch, it came down in chains to our world. You'll read Nefesh HaChaim, Shaar Dalet. You'll see this at length, how this happened, the process by which it devolved all the way from up there down to here. But the Torah doesn't belong here. It's otherworldly. So too, Olam Haba, obviously, is the next world. There's Olam Haba, it's not physical, it has nothing to do with our world. Therefore, a person, a Jewish person, any person, has no shaychus to these things. How could we have an Eretz Yisrael? How could we connect to a Torah? How could we live in an Olam Haba? We don't have any relationship, we have no shaychus, there's no interaction, no communication between a physical being, a guf like me, and an Olam Haba, and a Torah, and an Eretz Yisrael. It's not possible. Says the Maharal, that's where Yisurin come in. You know what Yisurin are? You know what suffering is? It strips away the Gashmias. It makes this world a little bit less magushimdik, a little bit less physical, a little bit less enjoyable. And as we strip away those layers, as we become a little bit separated, a little bit separated from this world, right, divorced from the things of this world, all of a sudden we're more and more kadosh. We're more and more nivdal. We're more and more lofty, and suddenly we can have a communication with the Torah. Suddenly, we can live in an Eretz Yisrael. Suddenly, we can inherit an Olam Haba because we are no longer the guf, the Megushim Dik guf. We're no longer bound to that Gashmias that we had before, but now we are fit, we're ra'i, to be able to be Mekabel Torah, to be able to Mekabel Olam Haba and Mekabel in Eretz Yisrael. So these three things are niknes b'yisurin. And that too speaks to what we're talking about. And when a person suffers, and when a community suffers, and when a Klal Yisrael suffers, it's a purgatory. It's a purification. We become holier. We become bigger. The Maharal here in this context in the Hakdama to Derech Chaim, he connects the word Musar to Yisurin. That the same way Yisurin torture a person, so too Musar. If a person is a Baal Musar, they shun the things of this world. So they miyasser themselves in their taivas. They suffer to not enjoy, engage in their taivas. They don't indulge, and that's a form of Yisurin. He doesn't say this, but I wonder, and maybe someone will look this up for me, I wonder if the word Yisurin, the word Musar, come from the same root of sar, of hasara, of removal. That it's all the same thing. We're removing our taivas. We're removing our enjoyment. Yisurin, musar, hasara, stripping things away. There's no more layers. There's no more physicality. We become the pure neshama that we really are supposed to be. That's what happened at every stage in history when we suffered Yisurin, that we found the Kadosh Baruch Hu in those moments, according to the Maharal. And this is uniquely true, apparently. Look in source number 9 and source number 10. This is uniquely true about Kabbalah Satorah, about Matan Torah. What happened before Matan Torah? What was necessary before Matan Torah? There was a Kor HaBarzel. There was a purgatory. There was a moment of Avdus, a long moment of Avdus. There was a Ger Yezaracha. There was a time when we were avadim in Mitzrayim. We had to suffer in order to cleanse ourselves, in order to become holier, in order to become more nivdal, or more kadosh, to be zoche, to a matan Torah. That was a necessary first step. The holy Yetzias Mitzrayim was bo tziachas ha'am min Mitzrayim, tab dones elokim ala har hazeh. At our Sinai, Kadosh Baruch Hu introduces himself not as God creator of the world. That would have been a better resume, you know, builder, I would think. No, Anochi Hashem Lekach Asher Hotzei Sicha, Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Directly linked to the Yetzias Mitzrayim is Kabbalah Satorah, because that suffering is a necessary step in a Kabbalah Satorah. It's not only the impetus, the motivating factor, as we began with, but you actually find HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you find the Kabbalah Satorah within the tragedy, within the calamity as well. The tragedy that preceded the victory of Purim was one such tragedy. It's true, there was a happy ending, but don't forget about the years and years and years of suffering the Jews were going through in that gullus. Don't forget about the gezeros of Haman. Don't forget about the bowing down that they were doing. Don't forget about the party of Achashverosh. There was a lot of suffering. Klal Yisrael was on a low. But it's dafka there where there's a kimu v'kiblu. It's dafka there, on the lowest of lows, when Klal Yisrael is in despair, that we can have a precursor, that we could have a forbearer, we could have a precedent for a Kabbalah Satorah, because Yisurin always necessarily leads to a Kinyan HaTorah, if only we will tap into it. Lastly, and perhaps this is the most worthwhile to think about, and the most creative and the newest idea that I think we can take home with us, if you look in source number 11, there's an interesting Das HaKeinu Mibalei HaTosfos. Truth is, he gets a lot of credit from the Das HaKeinu Mibalei HaTosfos. It's apparently a Medrash, but he's the one who quotes it, so everyone quotes it as a Das HaKeinu. The Medrash says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, Yisro wanted to be part of Kabbalah Satorah. Whether Yisro came before or after is not really part of it. Either way, Moshe Rabbeinu sends him away. Whether it's before or after, he definitely sends him away afterwards. But it's written before. So either he came before or he came after, unclear. But Yisro wanted a piece of Matan Torah, and somehow Moshe Rabbeinu sends him away. In that context, the Medrash says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, source number 11, Bonai hayu b'shibud Mitzrayim. My children, the Klal Yisrael, were in Mitzrayim. They were avadim. Haya Yisro, haya yoshev shokir boteach. He was sitting on his couch in Midian. He was sitting on his back porch with a pipe and watching his fat cows. Don't they say Yisro was always fattening cows or something? He was sitting on his back porch watching his fat cows roam around in his backyard. This type of world, that type of world. He was enjoying himself. Klal Yisro was slaving away in Mitzrayim. Eino din sheyismach besimchas haTorah. Yisro can't partake in a Simcha Satorah. Yisro can't be part of a Kabbalah Satorah. Why not? So there's a Chashav Rosh Kol in Eretz Yisrael. His name is Reb Simcha Maimon. Reb Rebach has a Mishpacha who learned by him. He's the Rosh Kol of the Brisker Kol, but you'll have to explain to us another shir why it's called the Brisker Kol, because it's not Brisker. It is a Kol, at least, but it's not Brisker. But the Reb Simcha Maimon is just a Gevaldik Atam Chacham, such a creative thinker. So in one of his Shirim on Chumash, he mentions this Das, the Kenim Valley Tosfos, and he gives a beautiful pshat. He says that what does Kabbalah's Ol Torah Mitzvos demand? Torah is an Ol. It's a yoke that we have to bear, which means we have to be avadim. We have to be slaves. We have to be slaving for our Kadosh Baruch Hu. We have to be working for our Kadosh Baruch Hu. We have to know there's an Adon, and we have to be subjugating ourselves to him. Klal Yisrael needed an Avdus and Mitzrayim. Why? Because that's a life of Torah and Mitzvos. A life of Torah and Mitzvos demands Avdus. It demands subjugating yourself. It demands bending over and receiving an Adon as your master in everything in life. We learned that lesson in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was the training ground for the Kabbalah Satorah that took place afterwards. They're necessarily connected. And Yisro, who sat on his porch watching his cows, he could not be part of that. He did not know how to be an Adon. He didn't know how to suffer, how to bear a yoke. He didn't know how to be Makabel and all. So he could not partake in a Kabbalah Satorah. Yetzias Mitzrayim wasn't the key. Avdus Mitzrayim was the key. Being the slaves of Mitzrayim taught us. It was the fertile training ground for us to learn how to become Avdei Hashem. Unbelievable. That's what Reb Simcha Maimon points out. Now, that doesn't really help us with Purim. There was no Avdus in Purim. You could tell me Haman bought the Jewish people. There was no Avdus. There was no slavery. But there's another point that I think we have to realize, and we'll end with this. In source number 12, we have the Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara tells us very interestingly that when a ger is bale is gayer, a non-Jew comes and he wants to convert. So we tell him a whole bunch of things. We teach him Kabbalah Torah Mitzvos. We teach him a few Mixtus Kalos, Mixtus Chamuros. But one of the things we say to him, if you look in the bold, Mara Isa Shebasal is gayer. What are you doing over here? What do you want from the Jewish people? I mean, I know you came to one lox thing, but other than lox, there's a lot. We get smoked a lot more than lox does. Let's just say, right? Iata yodei she Yisrael bizman hazed davim duchufim suhufim miturafim yisurim ban aleihem is not gishmak. Unlike the song, it is not kishmak to be a yid. It is very difficult to be a Yid. We suffer, and no, I didn't plan it. That's the amazing part. I didn't plan it. We connect over that. You know, my brother-in-law was the mechaber. Yeah, so we could both be made fun of in that. So it's not kishmak to be a Yid. Maybe it's a new song, Taka. Not kishmak to be a Yid. So it's not kishmak. It's terrible. It's yisur, and it's such suffering. It's terrible. We're always downtrodden. You still want to be Jewish, and what does this ger say, this ger tzedek? He says, Im Omer, if he says, Yadea ani ve'eni kedai, I know, and I still want part of it. Adrava, that's what I want. Mikabno so miyad. Why? Why is this part of the Geirus process? Why do we need to tell him about the suffering the Jewish people are going to endure? Why does he need to know about that as he comes in to be part of the tribe? You know what the answer is? Because that's not just a tangential point that happens in Jewish life. That is Jewish life. That is what being a Jew is. Being a Jew, being Mikabel Torah and Mitzvos means that we are giving up this world. No matter how much we make, and no matter how much we succeed in the physicality in this world, it's not what's meaningful to us. We use it for good things, we hopefully use it in the right way, but that is not what this world is for. In fact, if you look in Source 13, the Maharal spells this out so beautifully. We know Bereshis Bara Elokim Es HaShemayim Es HaAretz, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, Bereshis, Bishvil Reshis, Reshis is Yisrael, Shenikra Reshis. So he says, this world was created for the Jews, and yet we find them suffering all the time. What does that mean? And the Maharal explains so gorgeously that no, Olam Haba is the Jewish world. This world, we need to go through the purgatory. We need to live in this world because we have to get through this world as a prusdor, as a hallway into the next world. But this is not our place. The suffering is demanded. The suffering is necessary. Suffering is part of the Jewish life. And so not only is the tragedy and the calamity and the suffering and the hardship and the slavery, not only is that an impetus for tshuva like we started with, and not only is that the place where you find the Kadosh Baruch Hu because everything else disappears, everything else dissolves, and all that's left is the ahava for our Ribono Shel Olam. No. The suffering is Yiddishkeit. This hardship is Yiddishkeit. We enjoy certain things, but ultimately the world shuns us and we're supposed to shun the world right back. And so Klal Yisrael had to go through a Mitzrayim to learn that they were Avadim, and Klal Yisrael had to go through a Purim, had to go through a tragedy of a Malik, had to go through the suffering and the hardship and the challenge of a Malik in order to have a Kimu, a Kiblu. Because they needed to have that Kabbalah's Ol Torah Mitzvos like the Ger does in the Gemara Nivamos of we know what it involves and we want it anyways. That is Jewish life. That is Yiddishkeit. So we shouldn't know any more suffering. Kadosh Baruch Hu has a way of taking care of us without us having to go through this. We should live in an Olam Haba that's peaceful, in an Olam Hazeh that's peaceful, and an Olam Haba that's peaceful. We should be living in a world like this, that we're safe, that we're comfortable, that we shouldn't have to suffer anymore. But if we are going to suffer, and if we are going to have hardships, it behooves us to take the time to think about it, how that can lead to a Kabbalah Satorah by Matan Torah, and ultimately to a Kimu V'Kiblu of Purim. So B'siyat D'Shmaya we daven, that the current tragedy we're going through should lead to a Kabbalah Satorah, that Purim should boost it for us, and ultimately we should be Zocheh to Ora Zu Torah. B'siyat D'Shmaya. Thank you very much.